He wasn't just fast, he made time Neo. From a barefoot boy racing goats through the hills of Jamaica, to the world's greatest sprinter who danced before the gun and smiled through the storm. Usain Bolt didn't just break records, he rewrote what humans believed was possible. But behind the gold medals and roaring stadiums lies a deeper story of pain, pressure, failure, and faith. This is not just the tale of a man who ran faster than anyone in history. This is the legacy of lightning and what happens when it stops. Welcome to the History of the Caribbeans podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today, we present to you Usain Bolt, A Journey Through Time, Episode 3. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 9, The Man Who Changed the Sport. Some athletes break records. Some ignite stadiums. A rare few lift entire nations. But once in a generation, someone comes along who doesn't just play the game. They change the way the game is seen, felt, remembered. Usain Bolt was no longer running to prove he belonged. He was running to prove that everything we thought we knew about sprinting, about competition, form, pressure, legacy, could be turned on its head and still end in gold. He didn't just move fast. He moved the sport forward. And the world wasn't ready for what came next. Berlin, 2009. The Church of Speed. August 16, 2009. Exactly 1 year to the day after his 9.69 Olympic miracle. The World Championships in Berlin became the next stage for Bolt's unfolding legend. But this wasn't just another meet. It was a spiritual moment, a global congregation gathering under a holy banner. Speed. The anticipation was deafening. The stadium packed. Millions of eyes glued to televisions. And in lane 4 stood the same man who had once danced before Olympic finals, smiling like the storm didn't faze him. But this time, he wasn't smiling. He was focused. Tyson Gay, the American powerhouse, stood nearby, silent and cold with intensity. He had clocked the third fastest time in history going into the meet. His stride was tight, his form clinical. He had trained with a singular goal, to dethrone the king. And the king was ready. The 100 meters that redefine physics. Set. Bang. Bolt burst from a blocks, not first, but better than ever. His start, once his Achilles heel, had sharpened to near perfection. By 30 meters, he was shoulder to shoulder with Gay. By 40, he pulled ahead. By 50, the race was over. The clock read 9.58 seconds. A time so fast, so alien, that even Bolt glanced back at the scoreboard in disbelief. 9.58. It was as if the laws of biomechanics had cracked open for one brief moment, just long enough for humanity to see what was truly possible. He had broken his own world record by a staggering 0.11 seconds, the largest margin in 100-meter record history. The world reacts. Commentators lost composure. Scientists began re-examining human thresholds. Track analysts rewound the tape again and again, trying to understand what had just happened. How could a 6'5" man accelerate that quickly? How could someone run so loose, so wild, and still be so fast? Was he the greatest of all time already? And back in Jamaica, the sky erupted with fireworks. The island shook with music and celebration. He had done more than win. He had pushed human performance into myth, a new language of competition. But it wasn't just the numbers. It was how he did it. Bolt didn't run with clenched fists and grimaces. He didn't talk trash in locker rooms or sabotage his rivals with mind games. He danced. He joked. He winked at cameras. He celebrated before races even began because he knew the outcome. He created an entirely new archetype, the joyful destroyer. And the world loved him for it. Sponsors couldn't get enough. TV producers designed broadcasts around his races. Event planners shifted schedules just to ensure that the final race of the day was a Bolt appearance. Because when he stepped on the track, even non-sports fans tuned in. The 200 meters, another miracle. Just 4 days after his 100-meter masterclass, Bolt returned for the 200. The weather was clear. The stage set. And once again, he shattered the world record. 19.19 seconds. No one had run a 200-meter dash under 19.30 seconds except Usain Bolt. And now, he had broken his own barrier. Coaches and commentators began speculating that Bolt's times might be untouchable for decades. Even his competitors shook their heads in disbelief. Asafa Powell said in an interview, "We're all running for second now." And that wasn't defeatism, it was reverence. Track and field's renaissance. Before Bolt, track and field had been losing its grip on the global imagination. The sport was drowning in doping scandals. Names that once filled stadiums had been disqualified, banned, disgraced. Trust was fading. Audience interest waned. But Bolt changed everything. He was never caught in controversy, never accused of cheating. He was tested constantly, passed consistently. He was clean. He was charismatic. He was real. He didn't just revive the sport, he resurrected it. Ticket sales surged. Television ratings skyrocketed. Young kids once obsessed with football or basketball began talking about sprinting. Suddenly, people cared about heat sheets. They argued over split times at dinner. They mimicked Bolt's signature pose, arms pointed like an arrow, a half smile, chest proud. And he embraced it all because he understood something few athletes ever do. If you become the story, you carry the sport. Rivalries and rising shadows. Of course, not everyone bowed. Rivals continued to train, to fight, to find flaws in the king's armor. Tyson Gay, Johan Blake, Justin Gatlin, all sprinters with unreal talent and explosive speed, all gunning for the top spot. And for a while, the competition got closer. Blake beat Bolt at Jamaica's 2012 trials. Gay clocked incredible times. Gatlin returned from suspension with a vengeance. But still, Bolt remained the centerpiece. Not because he never lost, but because when it mattered, he delivered. And the world trusted him. Even when others rose, Bolt defined the mountain they climbed. Beyond the track, off the track, his impact spread even further. Bolt began doing philanthropic work, launching the Usain Bolt Foundation to help underprivileged youth gain access to education and cultural opportunities. He appeared at schools across the Caribbean, shaking hands with barefoot kids who saw in him their own story amplified. He visited hospitals, donated to disaster relief, advocated for fair sport and clean competition. He wasn't just running for medals anymore. He was running for meaning. The man who changed the sport. By the end of 2009, Usain Bolt had done more than dominate track and field. He had redefined it. He had taken a sport on the brink of irrelevance and infused it with personality, joy, and hope. He showed that greatness didn't have to be bitter, that champions could smile, that the best in the world could also be the most loved. He didn't just change records. He changed the way we see speed. And as 2010 loomed, one thing was clear. The world was no longer chasing a man. It was chasing a movement. And the movement had a name. Usain Bolt. Chapter 10, London. The crown cemented. By 2012, Usain Bolt wasn't just a name on a starting list. He was a living standard, a time etched in every stopwatch, a silhouette mirrored in playgrounds across continents. But with glory comes weight, and with kingship, doubt. Because staying on the throne, history warns us, is often harder than reaching it. He had stunned the world in Beijing. He had rewritten what the human body was capable of in Berlin. He had laughed and danced and flown past rivals with such grace that the sport of sprinting began to feel different. But as the London Olympics approached, murmurs grew louder. Doubt crept in through headlines, whispers, data charts. Was Bolt still hungry? Was he still fast? Was the fire still there? In the 4 years since Beijing, challengers had risen from every corner of the track. Johan Blake, his Jamaican teammate nicknamed the Beast, had begun to gain ground and headlines. In 2011, Blake had won the 100-meter at the World Championships in Taegu after Bolt false-started out of the race. For the first time in years, Bolt was no longer untouchable. The media began crafting a new narrative. Has the king lost his crown before the games have even begun? And Bolt just smiled. The trials of fire. The Jamaican Olympic trials were no victory lap. they were a war. Johan Blake beat Bolt in both the 100 meters and 200 meters. Cleanly. No injuries to blame. No false starts. Just raw, ruthless competition. The headlines were relentless. Bolt beaten. Changing of the guard. The beast rises. But in his Kingston training camp, Bolt didn't panic. He trained harder. Slept earlier. Ate cleaner. Laser focused. Coach Glenn Mills remained calm. "We're peeking at the games," he said to journalists. "That's the plan." But beneath the bravado, Bolt knew the truth. This was the most important meet of his life. Not because he needed another medal, but because he needed to remind the world, and himself, that the throne wasn't inherited. It was earned. Every time. London, a city watching. August 2012. London. A city built on tradition, pride, and royalty. But now, it waited for another kind of crown to be defended, not in a palace, but on a track, beneath floodlights, in the eyes of millions. The Olympic Stadium pulsed with anticipation. Flags draped across shoulders. Vuvuzelas blared. The entire world had paused to watch Bolt take on the greatest field ever assembled in a 100-meter final. Tyson Gay, Justin Gatlin, Asafa Powell, and Johan Blake, each of them capable of running sub 9.9 seconds. Each of them hungry. But only one of them had run 9.58. And he stood in lane 7. The 100-meter final. Legacy on the line. Bolt crouched at the blocks. A flicker of nerves. A deep breath. The stadium fell into hush. Set. Bang. He stumbled slightly out of the blocks, late by a fraction. Blake and Gatlin surged ahead in the first 20 meters. But Bolt didn't panic. He opened his stride, relaxed his shoulders, trusted the rhythm that had carried him through dirt roads and world stages. At 60 meters, he surged ahead. By 80 meters, he was clear. He crossed the finish line in 9.63 seconds, an Olympic record. The second fastest 100 meters ever run. And he did it after a bad start. The stadium erupted. Flags waved like flames. Commentators screamed. Bolt pumped his fists and fell to his knees, looking to the heavens. He had done it. He had silenced the noise. He had defended his Olympic title. The 200-meter final, a statement, not a surprise. For days later, the 200 meters awaited. Once Bolt's signature event, it now stood as the final seal on his greatness. He and Blake lined up side by side, the former king and the heir apparent. The race began. Bolt stormed the curve, long legs flowing like liquid power. He entered the straight with a clear lead and didn't surrender an inch. 19.32 seconds. Gold. Again, Blake took silver. Another Jamaican sweep. And, as Bolt jogged past the finish, he held up two fingers. Two-time Olympic champion in both sprints. He was now in a class by himself. The relay, the final coronation. And then came the 4x100 relay. Team Jamaica, Nesta Carter, Michael Frotter, Johan Blake, and Usain Bolt. They knew the stakes. The Americans were fierce. The pressure, immense. But they delivered flawlessly. Bolt received the baton at top speed and devoured the anchor leg like a man chasing eternity. 36.84 seconds. World record. Gold again. A clean sweep. For the second consecutive Olympics, Bolt had gone triple gold. 100 meters. 200 meters. For by 100 relay, no one had ever done it before. Not once. Let alone twice. What it meant. This wasn't just a defense. It was a reclamation. London wasn't about speed. It was about supremacy. It was about surviving the rise of rivals, the whispers of doubt, the distractions of fame, and still rising to the moment. And Bolt didn't just rise. He danced. He commanded. He reminded the world what it meant to be great with grace. More than medals. By now, Bolt's greatness had extended far beyond the lanes. He had changed how we see athletes. Before Bolt, sprinting had been about clenched jaws and gritted teeth. Now, it was about expression, artistry, celebration. He showed that confidence doesn't have to be cruel. That dominance can still be delightful. That the best in the world can lift the sport around them, not just leave it in their shadow. Kids in Ethiopia wore shirts with his pose. Graffiti artists in Brazil painted murals of his finish line celebrations. Track meets in Sweden and Belgium sold out when his name appeared on the roster. Wherever he went, he brought an energy that transcended language, borders, and culture. He wasn't just the fastest. He was the face of joy, the crown cemented. As the London Olympics closed with fireworks and flag waving, one truth was carved into history. Usain Bolt was no longer just a champion. He was the greatest sprinter of all time. No one else had done what he had done. No one else had made it look the way he did. And as the torch dimmed and the stadium emptied, Bolt walked off the track slowly, arms raised, his fingers tracing the air like he was signing his name into the sky. Not for glory, not for legacy, but because he knew. He had just reminded the world that greatness wasn't finished. Not yet. Chapter 11. When Titans Begin to Fade. Even lightning, for all its fury and brilliance, does not strike forever. It flashes. It blinds. It leaves scorch marks in its path. And then it disappears into the clouds, leaving behind silence, awe, and memory. After London 2012, Usain Bolt stood atop the world with both arms raised, not in defiance, but in triumph. His legacy, carved in gold and record books, was now unquestionable. 2 Olympics. 6 gold medals. Double-triple champion. No blemishes. No excuses. He had done what no man had ever done. But greatness, when achieved so completely, brings with it a subtle curse. What now? And in the years that followed, Bolt began to feel the faintest chill of a shadow creeping in. The shadow of time. The body's whisper. It started quietly, a tightness in the hamstring that lingered longer than it should, a stiffness in the back that no massage could quite fix, a fatigue that crept in after races, clinging longer than it once did. He was still winning, still fast, still smiling, but something had shifted beneath the surface, a quiet conversation between his body and gravity. The legs that once floated now felt heavier after practice. The recovery time stretched. Injuries that once healed in days now required weeks of cautious treatment. Scoliosis, the spinal condition that had always lurked in the background, began to assert itself. Bolt's spine, curved and imbalanced, placed pressure on his hips and hamstrings. He managed it with therapy, stretching, and core work, but even then, he could feel the strain echo in his stride. Coach Glenn Mills watched carefully. He didn't say much, but he noticed the signs. Bolt arriving a little later for training, walking slower between drills, stretching longer on the mat. Age, of course, was part of it. But with Bolt, it was also about the weight of history, the burden of expectations, the strain of sustaining perfection, the rise of rivals. While Bolt was still the centerpiece, the stage around him was shifting. Justin Gatlin, older, but now resurging after a doping suspension, returned to the track with a vengeance. Clean, focused, laser sharp, Gatlin had become the villain in the public's eyes. But on the track, he was a threat. Johan Blake, younger, powerful, relentless, was recovering from injury and hungrier than ever. In his shadow, Jamaican fans whispered that maybe the beast was finally ready to devour the throne. And new challengers emerged from all corners. Andre DeGrasse from Canada, Trayvon Bromell, Christian Coleman from the U.S. Each of them with bold times and fearless ambitions. They didn't revere Bolt the way his old rivals did. They wanted him, not for disrespect, but because they'd grown up watching him. And now they were ready to race him, not chase. Race. The 2013 World Championships, Moscow. Bolt entered Moscow as the favorite, of course. He always did, but the pressure was different now. His starts, once slow but recoverable, now mattered more than ever. He could no longer afford to stumble. The room for error was shrinking. The 100-meter final approached under a cold, gray sky. Gatlin started strong. For the first 60 meters, he led. But Bolt, ever the finisher, surged ahead in the final 40 and crossed the line first. 9.77 seconds. A win. But no record. No flash of brilliance. Just efficient excellence. Bolt would later admit that something fell off. He wasn't tired. He wasn't hurting. But the magic had felt just slightly out of reach. In the 200 meters, he still dominated. That was still his domain, his stride, so powerful in the curve, carved through the air like poetry. But the question had begun to creep in, not from the press, not from the fans, but from within. How long can I do this? The mental fog. The physical strain was manageable. The mental fog was harder. Bolt began wrestling with a problem few champions discuss: how to stay motivated after achieving everything. He had medals. He had money. He had love from a global audience. He was a living legend. So why wake up at 5:30 a.m. for hill sprints? Why keep killing the same demons he'd already beaten? The flame that had burned so bright since Sherwood content. The flame that lit up Beijing, Berlin, London, now flickered. He tried to keep things light. Still joked during interviews. Still posed after wins. Still danced in front of the crowd. But Coach Mills noticed something in his eyes. A kind of distance. Like part of him was already beyond the track. Questions of legacy. And then came the comparisons. Every time Bolt raced, analysts speculated whether his performances still held up to his 2008 or 2009 versions. Is this the best Bolt? Is he slowing down? He's still winning. But the ellipses grew louder. Even when he won, it felt as if the world wanted more. As if being fast was no longer enough. He had to be impossible again. He had to outrun his own ghost. And the truth is, no one outruns their ghost. The doping dilemma. In the middle of all this, sprinting once again found itself under the weight of doping scandals. Several top athletes, some of whom had challenged Bolt, tested positive. The whispers began again. How has Bolt never failed a test? Is it even possible to be this dominant without enhancement? Bolt stood firm. He opened up his entire testing history to scrutiny. He spoke out passionately against doping. He welcomed every test. "I don't fear the testers," he said. "I fear the idea that children won't believe greatness can be clean." He didn't just protect his name. He protected the idea of hopeful excellence. The belief that someone could rise from a small village in Jamaica, eat yams, train hard, and become the fastest man alive without shortcuts. A new kind of victory. The wins kept coming, but they were quieter, less explosive. The times ticked upward, still world class, but no longer record threatening. And slowly, Bolt began to prepare himself, not for a race, but for a transition. He began investing in business ventures, Bolt Mobility, restaurants, music production. He began talking about life after sprinting. He still trained, still competed, but the narrative was shifting. He was no longer just a champion defending his titles. He was a man beginning to imagine who he could be when the spikes came off. And yet the world still watched. Because even when titans begin to fade, even when the stride loses half a beat, even when the records stop falling, legends remain. Not because of what they run, but because of how they ran. And Bolt, even on his worst days, still ran like no one else on earth. The world was changing. So was he. And soon, he would have one last chapter to write. Not in numbers. Not in medals. But in grace. Chapter 12. Rio, the final reign. The sun rose differently over Rio. It wasn't just another games. It was a final chapter. An echo wrapped in expectation. A moment suspended between past and present. Glory and goodbye. By 2016, Usain Bolt wasn't just a global icon. He was a living legacy. A time capsule of greatness still running laps around mortality. The world no longer asked if he would win. They asked if he would finish. Because behind every camera flash, every cheer, every headline, there was a growing awareness. This would be the last time. And Bolt knew it. He had no more records to chase. No ghosts to outrun. No rivals he needed to silence. Only one thing remained. Closure. The last dance begins. Rio de Janeiro was wild and electric. Color exploded from every corner. Music, laughter, chaos, movement. It was a carnival city, hosting the most sacred of competitions. Bolt arrived with a calmness that surprised many. There were no loud proclamations, no big interviews, just a quiet nod to the moment. "I'm here to finish what I started," he told the press with a soft smile, "to close it out right." He knew his body was different now. He was 30. The hamstrings tighter, the starts slower, the training harder. But his mind? Sharper than ever. Because now, it wasn't about shocking the world. It was about writing his own ending. 100 meters, the last sprint of the king. The build-up was deafening. The 100-meter final at the Estadio Olimpico wasn't just a race. It was a pilgrimage. Millions tuned in not just to witness a competition, but to watch history unfold in real time. In lane 6 stood Justin Gatlin, older now, still hungry, still chasing. In lane 7, Usain Bolt, long-limbed and focused. The crowd was electric, screaming his name as if it were a spell. Bolt, 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 set, bang. Gatlin started strong. The Americans roared. For a moment, just a moment, it seemed he might steal it. But Bolt, always composed, began his surge at 60 meters. His head leaned forward. His arms drove. His long stride devoured the track. He passed Gatlin at 80 meters. He didn't look back. He didn't celebrate early. He just ran, crossing the line in 9.81 seconds. Gold. Again. For the third consecutive Olympics, Usain Bolt was the fastest man on Earth. Not the youngest. Not the freshest. But still undeniably, the king. The roar of relief. There was no extravagant celebration this time. No thumping chest. No wild dancing. Bolt dropped to his knees and looked skyward. He exhaled. Long, deep. Final. This wasn't euphoria. It was release. Tears shimmered in his eyes, not of sadness, but of satisfaction. He had done what few ever do. He had stayed at the top. Not for 1 year. Not for two. But for nearly a decade. 200 meters, the heartbeat of his legacy. If the 100 meters was Bolt's crown, the 200 meters was his heart, the event he grew up loving, the race that first made the world take notice. And now in Rio, it would be the last time he'd run it on the Olympic stage. Bolt wanted this one, not for the fans, not for the cameras, but for himself. The stadium buzzed with anticipation. No world record this time. No Blake at his heels. No shadow of Berlin or Beijing. Just Usain, on a curve he knew like home. He ran with control, grace, and finality. And when he crossed the line at 19.78 seconds, ahead of Canadian rising star André Degrasse, he raised his arms, not in conquest, but in completion. It was his 8th Olympic gold, and perhaps the most intimate of them all. Because this was the one where he knew the end had come. Relay, a farewell in 4 steps. Then came the 4x100-meter relay. The final. The last baton. Bolt would anchor Team Jamaica one last time. The stadium was bursting at the seams, every nation watching. Every child hoping for one last miracle. Jamaica ran clean. Efficient. Bolt took the handoff in third. He surged forward. And in that moment, the years melted away. He flew. He passed the Americans, passed the Japanese, crossed the line in first, gold number 9, a perfect Olympic career, 3 Olympics, 3 events each, 3 golds every time, a triple-triple, unprecedented, unrepeatable, the salute heard around the world. Bolt didn't pose right away. He didn't beat his chest or flash a peace sign. He walked slowly to the crowd, took the Jamaican flag, wrapped it around his shoulders, and bowed. A deep, humble, final bow. To the track. To the crowd. To the world. And the world stood. Not just clapping, but crying. Because this wasn't just the end of a race. It was the end of an era. What he carried. In Rio, Bolt carried more than a baton. He carried. The spirit of Jamaica, from Sherwood content to the world stage. The dreams of the young. Every child who believed joy could still win. The legacy of clean sport, a body built without shortcuts. The rhythm of freedom, the idea that you can be the best without being bitter. He didn't just win medals. He won hearts, The Final Rain. As the closing ceremony neared, organizers asked Bolt to carry the Jamaican flag one last time. He did, with tears in his eyes and fire in his soul. Cameras followed him as he walked, slow, deliberate, regal. It was the image that would live forever. A giant, a boy who outran the world, a man who never stopped smiling. The Rio Games ended. The torch was extinguished. And in the silence that followed, one name echoed like a whisper written in the wind. Bolt.